Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey everybody, it's Josh Rutledge, your co-host for Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to support us more, please head over to our website, fearscapepodcast.com. There you can click on store and browse some really awesome t-shirts and maybe pick a couple up, or even go to our Patreon page and see how you can support us monthly. We love bringing you awesome content just as much as you like listening to it. Enjoy the show.
Hello. I'm so glad you could join us. I hope you brought your blanket to hide under. The spooky crew is going to discuss things and events from other realms. Ghosts, cryptids, aliens. Be sure to hold your blanket extra tight as the boys take you deep into the Fearscape.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another frightening episode of Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Man, my name is Stefan Gearhart, and I am your host for the evening. And I am joined by the very astute and very frighteningly wonderful co-host, Mr. Josh Rutledge. How are you today?
Why, thank you. I am doing spectacular. I was thinking you were going to go with wondrous, but I'll take wonderful.
No,
I'll
you're wonderful. You make me dance on air. like cloud nine,
like dancing on the ceiling.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Perfect. Lionel Richie all the way. That's exactly how you make me feel. That's why I'm glad to be here week after week with you, sir.
Why, thank you. Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
No. Thank you.
All right. I'll take it. You're welcome. No, we have a really cool show, man. This is a little different than what we normally do. We have something very, very interesting. We reached out to a friend of a friend who had a very impressive Sasquatch sighting. But the story goes on from there. We have a man that did the investigation following that sighting. So tonight we're going to be interviewing during our topic time, Joe Perdue, who is just a really cool dude. And he is from wild and weird West Virginia. He does the investigating there where they were able to find footprints and take casts of them, all sorts of really interesting stuff, to the point where Joe just is... even got us completely convinced, and he seems, even though he's an investigator, seems pretty skeptical.
Yeah, and I think that it's just gonna be a really good show.
It is. So stick around for that. But we're gonna move right along because I'm ready for you guys to hear this interview. But we got to do what we normally do. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? So we're gonna move straight into the psychic word of the week.
And now, the psychic word of the week.
All right, this psychic word or words of the week comes from the Encyclopedic Psychic Dictionary, written by June Bletzer. Rest in peace. And as usual, we crack it open and see what we found, and perfectly. The phrase that we get this week is monster activity. So here's what monster activity says. Monster activity is a study of large creatures, half man and half animal, appearing in many parts of the earth, sharing similar characteristics and behavioral patterns. One, they are unable to be captured. Two, difficult to physically see. Three, give evidence to their life and presence by being destructive to animals, humans, property, and environment. Four, prefer to work at night. 5, make hideous and shrieking noises. 6, appear more frequently after a UFO sighting and a lot of times in the same area. 7, capable of shifting dimensions. 8, inhabit woods, water, and plains. 9, here are some theories. A, belong to a giant nature spirit kingdom. B, a throwback from another culture or ancient times.
I just want to be clear in case anybody might be flying. I think they mean planes as in like the wide open prairie,
not airplanes. Yeah, and I'm not talking math either. Like, I'm talking...
Right, yeah. It's not, you know, well, snakes on the plane. It's not Sasquatch on the plane.
No, it's not Sasquatch. So, he's going to be in first class anyways. I mean, he's got to be. He's up there with Shaq because they're both long-legged. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, very interesting, the monster activity. And it's interesting because here we've talked about this book was written back in like 86 or 85 or something like that. And just the theories that we have come up with on our own, we're just in that definition.
Right.
It just blows my mind. Like those are things that we on our own without researching kind of came to the conclusion of. And yet everything we're reading and everything we're coming across fits those theories. And that to me tells me that's a universal theory. It has a little more credence to it in my thoughts, right?
Yep. If I am in a vacuum, let's say, because I really just started looking into a lot of this stuff since starting the show, and so let's say that I'm in a vacuum and I barely touch the surface of whatever, and I am looking into things and I come up with my own theories and ideas, and then we find books and documentaries and whatever that predate me, then I think that kind of says that my ideas, number one, are not original, but number two, that they're already founded in you know, somebody else has already had those same conclusions. So
yeah, for a long time, and that to me is pudding. That's pudding, right there. Those are those moments where I'm like, man, because yeah, I mean, my interest in the paranormal has always aligned with haunted things and the occult. Since I've been on the show, it has moved over to cryptozoology and UFO alien encounters and things like that, ultra-terrestrials. And of course, now finding they're all kind of mixed together in a sack of chicken there. But, you know, it's still like a chowder. Yeah. But I mean, like you, I was still very much in a vacuum in terms of, you know, cryptozoology and cryptids and things like that. So very, very, very interesting, man.
Indeed.
Crazy, crazy.
Indubitably.
But what's even crazier are the two stories I have for you this week for spooky news. So we're going to move right into some spooky news. All right. So the first one I have is actually kind of cool. And I'm kind of like, why don't we have this? And I'm like, hey, Tori Smith, Paranormal Help Desk, you need to get on this game level right here. So this comes from happymag.tv. Again, I don't know, that's a weird name, but it was also on a number of other news sites. But the headline reads, India's first paranormal hotline is live, and it is receiving a lot of calls. So this says, dim the lights and cue the track, because India has just landed its first ever paranormal hotline. Founded by author Jay Alani, the real-life Ghostbuster reportedly received 8 to 10 calls per day detailing close encounters with ghosts, spirits, black magic, or anything related to the paranormal world. As casual as this seems, the real highlight of this story is the hotline's founder. As a self-proclaimed paranormal boy, Alani has made a fine following for himself over the decades-long career in paranormal investigation, even landing a few TED Talks. The main motive behind this paranormal helpline number is to provide scientific solutions to those who are encountering any unusual incidents or have any questions about the paranormal world. This is what Alani said to the Hindustan Times. He says, in most of the cases, I have found that person who claims to experience any such unusual incident has been watching horror movies during this lockdown period. After questioning them about their daily routine, family history, and past trauma, I and my team of psychologists found that many of them, but not all, actually create a fictional ghost in their mind. It's really interesting stuff. Alani is a full-time ghost hunter. He's investigated over 100 haunted locations, has 150 cases of paranormal activity during his career. He's released books, podcasts, speeches, the whole nine yards. He's the founder of the Paranormal Company and host of Dark Destinations on India's Dish TV. I mean, this dude is everywhere, and it's really, really cool to imagine that he's doing something like that. And that's why I said, Tori, this is something you need, because you're basically doing the social media version of that,
right?
That's what I'm saying.
And when it's funny when you said the real life Ghostbuster, because when you talk about the hotline, it made me think about the commercial that they did in Ghostbusters. Oh yeah,
and even on here they've got the video for who you gonna call.
Yeah,
Ghostbusters. You know, like,
so yeah.
Leave it. Come on now. The other spooky news story I've got for you, just this, I mean, it's sad, but it cracks me up too. And this hits COVID and it hits everything else. So this comes from Variety, and the headline reads, Bolivian orchestra stranded in a haunted German castle are now surrounded by wolves during the pandemic. This is like, man,
you need to say that the way your sister says it.
Yeah, wolves. Wolves. I'm gonna say it again. Bolivian orchestra stranded in haunted German castle surrounded by wolves during the pandemic. You're welcome, Trisha. So this says a Bolivian orchestra group has been stranded in a German castle for 73 days after the countries closed their borders during the coronavirus pandemic. The musicians, some of whom are as young as 17 years old, arrived in Germany for a spring concert tour just as the crisis was beginning. However, their concerts were soon called off as Germany imposed a social gathering ban, and their flight back to Bolivia was canceled due to the country closing its borders. Since then, the group has been staying safe at Rheinsberg Palace, a 600-year-old castle located an hour and a half northwest of Berlin. Our bus broke down on the motorway. I remember joking that this was bad luck and perhaps our concerts would be canceled, but never did I think it would actually happen, said one member named Carlos. The ancient estate was home to German royalty dating back to the 1500s, including Frederick the Great, who the Groat, man, this is a lot. I'm not even hitting the German words yet. This includes Frederick the Great, who the group jokes is haunting the castle halls. We all joke that Frederick's ghost is following us and trying to trip us up. I don't usually believe in such things, but it does feel as if there are ghosts on the ground, said Camid Martella, a 20-year-old member of the orchestra. Now, here's where it gets crazy. So the castle grounds and surrounded woodland are also home to more than a dozen packs of wolves. And one member named Tracy Prado said she saw three wolves simply while out on a walk. She saw three wolves. Wolves. She says, I froze in fear, but they were just play fighting and moved on. The nearby town of Rheinsberg has been mostly welcoming to the musicians who socially distance themselves and remain at the castle grounds. The group stays on the estate. It has a kitchen and they get food dropped off to them. But yeah, they're scared to death. You know, Carlos says people think we're living in a fairy tale land, but I'm telling you, I'm scared of ghosts and wolves. Like,
I feel like we're like one step away from learning that the wolves are actually other musicians at the castle, and then it'll just be a CW show, you know.
Oh man, yeah, I would watch that. But yeah, that's what it is. And then at like during the day they just play music in the forest, and then at night they eat people. Like,
right, exactly. You know, yeah. And there's like a heartthrob, and
yeah, it's like GWAR. It's
like, yeah.
So, but yeah, that's what I got for spooky news. Two very interesting, cool stories. Nothing like crazy. I mean, they seem to be safe. No one's got attacked by the wolves. They just see them all the time, and you know, the castle is known to be haunted. You know, especially if they're playing classical stuff, that's probably like, oh, Frederick's like, oh yeah, I remember that one. I remember when Bach was here. I remember that. So
yeah, exactly. Well, Bach's one of the wolves now, so.
Yeah, oh man, oh yeah, he's part of the wolf Bach. You're welcome.
Oh my goodness.
And on that, we're going to move into the UFO sighting of the week. All right, Josh, what do we got for the UFO sighting of the week?
All right, so this was published on or sorry, reported, if you will, on Thursday, May 28th of this year. However, the sighting takes place in the 80s.
I was stationed on the Yellowstone in the early 80s. The ship had three cranes, two traveling 120-ton cranes, and one centerline 220-ton crane. I was the main operator. I spent 85% of my time on deck. Did not like it too much below deck. I saw the report of the lights in the water recently, and I know the SEALs had active operations practice on the ship. I think those were the lights. I was present when they came aboard. They came aboard, no one saw them. They made it to the bridge and secured the captain. The object I witnessed was an air contact. One night, I had mid-watch, which is 1200 to 0400 hours. We were headed for Puerto Rico. I was positioned on the forward, starboard side of the ship. After standing watch for a while, seems like there may have been some time loss. It was just there. Can't remember how it got there. I reported an air contact, 35 degrees altitude and approximately 25 miles distance. It was a bright white ball, a little larger than a golf ball at 25 miles. The reply on my headset was, "Good job, it's exactly 25 miles. At that time, I replied, "What the hell is it?" The response from the bridge was, "Shut your effing mouth and keep it effing shut." And I never brought it up again. And I don't recall several hours after that. Now, let's rewind 2 to 3 weeks. I was below deck and was approached by a second class petty officer. He asked me if I would be interested in becoming RADCON qualified. I was perplexed because the ship ran on diesel engines, but said, "What the hell, sure." He brought me some really simple tests. I took a few and passed them. Shortly after that, the petty officer showed me the reactor below deck. There was a reactor on that ship. Never saw anything like it. It was lit up in about the size of a small compact car, just sitting there, glowing white, and there was red. I stopped taking the test and never heard from that petty officer again, or never saw him again. I never really put it together until recently that the reactor possibly had something to do with the object I saw. Frankly, I was 18 years old and really didn't give two craps. Either way, it seems like the same old crap. No witnesses, no evidence, nothing. Don't get me wrong, I'm very interested in the organization, but it seems like we're fighting a losable battle.
Man, so two things stand out to me. One, the fact that here we are almost 40 years later, and he's like, I gotta say something.
I gotta tell somebody.
I can't
right?
shake yeah. this. I've been thinking about it for 40 years and I can't stop thinking about this. And the other one is, God, he's so right. You know, it's like, it sucks, you know, that we're fighting this losing battle when we've had more witnesses to UFOs yeah. than we have Jesus Christ. Yet that religion is considered as fact, right?
Well, yep. You know what's interesting? I think about this with what you just said with, you know, the witnesses. You think about the there's a speech that Morpheus does in one of the Matrix movies. I think it might have been the last one, but you know, he's talking about, you know, we have freed more minds, you know, in the last year than we had freed ever since we were, you know, Scion had started or whatever. And he's like making this speech that, you know, now is the time. Like that something needs to happen. And so I'm just thinking, you know, you said, you know, sightings have increased. People publicly sharing their sightings have increased. You could think of that as a freeing of the mind, if you will. And so, you know, we've talked about it before. I really do feel like we're on the verge, like we're on the cusp of something significant being, you know, released or told or happening.
Something. I mean, even Andrea Perrin is taking that on a new age approach and thinking the same thing. Yeah, I absolutely believe we're in the truth of the matter is if we all came together, I bet you our numbers would outweigh any religion in the world. Like if everyone that had a sighting said, hey, look, I had a sighting, and we tallied those numbers all around the world, I would be willing to bet it would be bigger than most religions.
Well, and I would, you know, we had Mary on, you know, she said she's a Christian, but she believes in aliens. So, I mean, I wonder how many people adhere to a religion yet right. still have.
Oh
had
yeah,
sightings,
they would still count into right, that for me. Right. Yeah, I'm just talking anyway. They don't have to be atheists. They're just. Yeah. I bet you, and that. But it's just that thing that people are afraid to come together and you know, say, oh, well, you know, yeah. I mean, it's that same thing. I mean, we see it with what's going right. on with protests and, you know, a lot of people that were afraid to stand up for somebody because they were afraid that their higher ups would be mad at them for protecting a black person. Right. And this right. has happened throughout the centuries here in America. The paranormal is similar in a lot of ways where people are afraid that they will be ridiculed. That's why most of the times when you see a UFO post or you see someone posting about hauntings or things like that, their first words are, I know I'm going to be ridiculed for this.
Yeah.
Even John, who we're going to have on today, he says that in his story. I know I'm going to be ridiculed for this, but I don't care anymore.
Yep. Well, and you know what's really sad and bad about this kind of this stuff is that, you know, so when I'm looking through trying to find what our UFO sighting of the week is going to be, I've got to be honest, I immediately dismiss anything that could be considered as Starlink.
Yeah. Well, you know,
not that I think that it is Starlink, just that I want to make sure that whoever might be listening to it can't just immediately say it's just Starlink.
And we have to do that. That's what's sad. That's what's sad is that we have to do that. And on the other side, not sad too, because it is good for paranormal investigators to be skeptical. We need to be, because we can't just believe everything. But we can't also, sorry, Keith, but we can't also say every cryptid is an owl either. You know, it's like we have to listen to people. Not everyone's crazy. And and the thing that we're learning, especially through things like MK Ultra and remote viewers and things like that, is that the mind is more powerful than the average man has. Especially there are some people that have gifts. And, you know, knowing my sister and myself and other people, I believe those things. And we may be able to tap into things that an average person may not be able to see. We may be able to see dimensional shifts. We may be able to see things, and maybe not everybody. And maybe it's a thing, like I said, once you see something paranormal, it's like a switch turns on and you can't turn it off.
Well,
maybe that's all it takes.
Well, like Vashti said when she was on, you know, everybody has it. Just not everybody is willing to accept it or open themselves to the possibility of it.
Right. And it may be like that whole thing. The only reason we're dying is because we're told we're supposed to die. Who knows?
Yeah.
Exactly. I don't know. It's all crazy.
I don't know either.
It's all creepy. Segue. it is creepy. And I want to talk about the creepiness that happened to us this past weekend on this week's Creepy Ketchup.
Creepy Ketchup. Creepy Ketchup.
Creepy Ketchup.
Creepy Ketchup. Y'all, it's creepy.
So holy moly, if you're tuning in for the first time, Creepy Ketchup is where we talk about the things that have happened to us in the past week. If anything, paranormal, related, haunted, aliens, UFO sightings, anything of the, you know, of the like. Nothing very paranormal in terms of haunting has happened to me this week. You know, just occasional brushes, things that I can brush off. but we had some interesting experiences at your house on Saturday, to the point where we were supposed to record an Unhinged episode, but got so caught up in all of this.
Yeah.
that we didn't.
We didn't. Yeah, it was. Yeah. So, you know, we had a nice little fire going, just kind of sitting out there and watching the, you know, it was a perfect night Saturday night. There was
beautiful.
Like, not a cloud in the sky, so you could just see all kinds of stars, and I think the first, you know, we saw a couple little things moving really high up, like really high up. And I mean,
yeah, that we could just write off as the space station or even Dragon. I don't know.
Satellites or but something. I mean, it's just but then a little like lower in the horizon, moving from like. South, I'm trying to get my directions here. So like from like southeast to like northeast, moving in that kind of direction at about maybe 15 or 20 degrees above the horizon, was a bright light that would blink, but only after you had hit it with like your green laser pointer in it. And before anybody says anything, it wasn't an airplane. We're not going to get hit by the FAA.
No, we would never do that. But yeah, I definitely have a high powered green laser that looks like a lightsaber. It's awesome. But yeah, we saw it and obviously I can't hit it. It's too small, but it's like, I would hit near it and then it would blink. And there was no even blinking here. It wasn't like, I was like, oh, five. It was random.
There was no determined interval. It would only blink in response to Stefan kind of beaming the green pointer close to where it was. And you're right. I mean, it was pretty far away. So there was no way we could. I mean, maybe if we had like some kind of a tripod set up or something, we might be able to target it. But when you're holding a pointer and your hand shaking,
Before anybody says it's a lightning bug does not stay on and then blink brighter. Like it was a light that we saw consistently. Like occasionally we would lose sight and then I would blink or I would shoot towards the area. It would blink and we would find it again and see it.
My best description, this is what I thought of when I saw it, was, you know how like a lighthouse or the light at the airport, how it like circles around and then it like flashes bright and then it circles around and then it flashes bright. That's what it kind of seemed like. It was like it would be this bright, intense flash and then it would fade out and then it would be this bright, intense flash. And then but there was no interval. It wasn't.
Yeah, there was no interval. It was uneven like a mofo. Sometimes it happened twice in a row. Boom, boom. Like,
you know, in the area that we were looking at, there's no airport or any of that kind of stuff, just before anybody says that. So it was not. It was not explainable, and so because it's not explainable, it's unidentified, and because it's unidentified, it makes it an unidentified flying object, therefore a UFO.
Right, and to me, it fits more the unidentified aerial phenomenon to me.
Yeah.
Especially when it coincided with the flashes that I make, which is a pretty common thing to happen, people will say, in UFO sightings. They can flash their flashlights or laser pointers at them and they'll flash back.
Yeah.
That is indeed what happened. It went behind the tree and then we saw it out on the other side sometime later and then it ducked into the horizon. It was gone.
Yeah. So, and then I think,
I will say this too, I don't mean to stop you, but it's like, it also felt it was at different speeds as well. It did not seem like it was at a consistent speed.
No, it definitely, when we first saw it, it was moving fairly, fairly quickly. And then after we started kind of playing with it, if you will, it still continued on its path, its course, but then it, you know, kind of seemed like it slowed down to hang around and play a little bit. So
exactly.
So you want to tell the second one that was kind of behind us and you just happened to look back there.
So was this during the Estes method or after? It had to be after because neither of us were on headphones.
Yeah, no, it was definitely after, and it was like we just happened to stand up.
Yeah, I felt this weird. We'll talk about the Estes sessions that we took as well, but I felt this weird impulse to just kind of look up. And I look up and I'm leaning back because the moon is way behind us. So I'm kind of looking back and then I see this light move and I'm like, oh, cool, here's another space station. And then all of a sudden it gets hugely bright. And I thought, well, maybe I didn't see it when it was small. And I'm thinking, oh, that's an airplane. But I mean, it's so bright. I mean, at least probably at least a half an inch in diameter from where we were sitting is what it looked like.
Yep.
I mean, it was big. And so if it was an airplane, that would be super low. It's not flashing. It's just super bright and it's moving. There's no sound. There's no blinking. And I'm like, Josh, look at this. Look at this. And so we look back and we're like, holy shit, that's so bright, you know? And then the light just dims. And
well, it shot upwards.
Yeah. And so
and then
like,
it dimmed out.
Yeah. It like shot upwards. And then like it got small. Like, so it went back to the original light that I saw, moved for a little bit, and then just gone.
So something I didn't think about then and I didn't say then, but I'm thinking about it now. What if whatever we were messing with came back?
Oh, came back around. Yeah. It. Yep. I wonder. I was so dumbfounded by it, I couldn't even shoot the laser pointer at it.
I wonder if it was waiting to see if it would get a reaction.
Yeah, I mean, the way it moved and everything like that, and then the brightness of the light. Yep. I mean, and it was funny because earlier we were just like, man, I really want to see something and better than what we've seen.
Yeah. And I mean, and I would say is from what I remember, as far as its size, it was probably about like the eighth of the size of the moon, as far as what you see in the night sky. Mm-hmm. And it was just as bright
The moon. It was so bright. And which is why immediately I thought it was a plane.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was, even with a plane, you can see the outline of the body and you can see all the other lights. This was just one solid white light. It was just insane. I've never seen anything like that before that I'm aware of. It was nuts.
So again, in case anybody listening is asking, no, we didn't. We weren't able to get video footage.
I wasn't even thinking about it.
Yeah, it's just.
Just fascinated by what we're seeing. And a lot of times these things happen within seconds. You know, I mean, this maybe lasted 10 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, I'm almost to the point now where I'm thinking that, like, when we go out there and stuff, we're just going to have to record like nonstop, and then
we just need to wear body cams
and hope that we catch something. So
right, we need to wear those Google body cams that sit on top of your head and records in like 3D so we can virtual reality it.
Exactly.
That's what I want.
But so those were our two sightings, if you will. We saw, like I said, we saw a couple other things that were like really high moving, but I think those could be easily dismissed as like a satellite or something like that.
I don't know. I mean, I saw that one during the Estes session where it told me to look up, and I look up and I see it and it blinks and moves and then comes back and blinks and then it's gone. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, so talking about the Estes sessions, I went under the headset, if you will, first. So do you want to talk about what you got from me? Reading?
Mostly that. It was, mostly look up. You said to look up a lot, and I would look up and just see random things. We're also convinced, I think you've heard us talk before on the show, that we're convinced that something lives in the wood line right behind your house, whether it be a cryptid or a spirit or something.
Or there's like a portal there.
Or a portal or something. But yeah, it's like, I mean, it was definitely talking about things like that. I'm struggling to remember anything else because we stupidly did not record
the
session.
The thing that I remember that you told me about was that you said it was like it was there. You said something like, are you in the sky or on the surface? And then and then my response was, on the surface.
Yeah, here on the surface. Right. Yeah. It was very, very interesting. You know, with the Estes method, of course, you're blindfolded and you can't hear anything.
I can't hear what you're asking.
A ghost box running through. Right. So when you say words that come off of a question that I've asked, blows my mind. Yeah. But apparently your name came up a lot during my Estes session.
Yeah, when you were under the headphones, if you will, yeah, I mean, it was like, I think my name, so both Joshua and Josh,
never call you Joshua. So yeah. The fact that it kept coming up was weird.
Came up like seven or eight times, as did Zeus and the son of Zeus.
Oh, yeah. Son of Zeus. Right.
Yeah. That came up a lot.
Which is interesting because, we talk about hybrid theory all the time. And then here's Zeus. Here's Hercules, so to speak. If Zeus was indeed an alien and not a god, he would indeed then be a hybrid.
Right. Well, and like I was talking about that night, you know, it could be that if you want to believe that, you know, Zeus was an alien and not a god, and he did in fact have children with mortals, if you will, or humans, then those humans that lived, they would have had children and offspring and so on and so forth down through the line,
much like the Nephilim.
You know, so maybe there is some sort of a minuscule, if you will, a genetic marker left behind for people who are descendants of,
right,
know,
and maybe
gods,
that's where will. These things like psychic gifts and things come from. In fact, it'd be a good question to ask our friend theologian about Nephilim and what about the line that was created from them, the ancestral line, or were they all wiped out during the flood? I don't remember.
I don't remember
where it took place.
It's probably conveniently.
Yeah, it's like it's a conveniency, though. So very interesting. Yeah, and we talked about, too, about the mission.
Yeah, it did. Like, every time it would talk about, every time it would say my name or whatever, I'd say, you know, what are we supposed to do? And at one point in time, the response came back that we're supposed to stay on mission. And I said, well, what is our mission? And then it said, spread the message, use the show. So here we are, spreading the message.
Well, yeah, which is just interesting. You know, we're on a mission. I mean, this show is not just for us to share information with people, but it is a quest for us.
Yeah.
I mean, we are seeking knowledge ourselves. I mean, and boy, do we have a surprise to share with you guys soon. I can't tell you now, but just in terms of everything that happened, just synchronicities, some amazing cool things have happened that we'll share with you down the road. That's going to be awesome. But yeah, it was a hell of a Saturday, man.
Yeah. And I think the one lesson that we learned is that regardless if we're just doing something for our own benefit, we need to record it.
Record everything. Because you never know.
You never know.
But on that, I'm ready to get rolling into this interview if you are.
Yep.
I'm very, very interested. We've got a great interview coming up for you with Joe Perdue. And like we talked about Sasquatch, we're going to take a quick ad break. And as soon as we get back from that, you're going to hear John Tinney's his account. Thank you. My brain is dead. His account that was posted on Facebook on the Wild and Weird West Virginia site, the investigators there. So just stick around after the break.
Hey, blanket huggers. Stefan here from Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. And do we have a scary good deal for you right now? If you head over to fearscapepodcast.com/gamefly, you can get a 30-day free trial Gamefly subscription on us. Now, if you're not familiar with Gamefly, it's a game and movie rental service where you can play the hottest video games for systems like the Nintendo Switch, Xbox One, or even the PS4. You can get up to 2 games or movies out at a time, and you can do that an unlimited amount of times a month. Josh and I love to play our game systems, and I am really enjoying the Final Fantasy VII Remake right now. And if you're like me, games are too expensive to buy and beat in the same weekend. Well, with Gamefly, you can get it and keep a game as long as you need. Then you just send it back and get the next game on your list. So head on over to fearscapepodcast.com/Gamefly today and give it a try.
My name is John Tinney. I share this event completely aware of the backlash and ridicule I will receive. The day was April 12th, 2020, and it had weather conditions shaping up to be perfect for my favorite hobby, amateur herpetology. So like every spring night when the rain is falling heavy, I decided it would be a great night to cruise the roads and document the species of reptiles and amphibians crawling on the floor of a local state forest. And like normal, an unnamed passenger, at this time, opted to cruise the back roads with me on the search. We arrived at the state forest a little after 8 p.m. The sun had not yet fallen, and the sky's not quite dark enough for the animals I was searching for to be emerging from their hiding places yet. So, we took a drive through the park to kill time, look for other interesting animals, and wait for the sun to fully set. Nothing unusual was happening. The frogs were starting to call as the sun fell behind the mountain and night began to fall, The birds chirping fell quiet with the sunset. The deer were retreating from the wet valley I was intending to search that night. Absolutely nothing unusual for the area I frequent on a regular basis. In an average week, I visit the same location 5, maybe 6 times to document any new egg masses, the species I observe, or anything else that I might find interesting at the given time. I have observed and heard coyotes and owls in this valley on several occasions and have become familiar with their behavior and noises as a result. This average night was about to take a terrifying turn I never imagined. In this particular forest, I have a handful of areas that host great habitats for documenting a wide variety of species. I made my way to the first vernal pool area I wanted to check in the flooded valley wetland that night. I exited my vehicle. The time now approaching 9 p.m., and I observed a toad on the gravel parking area. I decided to document this first species of the night. I stopped, got my phone out of my pocket, and snapped the first picture of the adventure. That would end up being the only explainable thing I encountered in the valley that night. As I took 2 to 3 more steps, just past the giant rocks that prevent vehicles from driving into the open area of the woods, towards the first vernal pool I was intending to shine with my flashlight, I heard a groan. A groan that I have never heard in these woods before. This groan was deep, almost sounding human, or at least primate in nature. Clearly, it was agitated and extremely too close to where I was currently standing. I had clearly interrupted something, and it was furious about it. Something was in this valley with me, and I had no identification for the sounds it was expressing towards my presence. The chills that shot down my spine and covered my body were like nothing I have experienced in my life. I looked back to see the unnamed person that came with me, void of color with eyes as large as I have ever seen on anyone. My first reaction was to get the hell back in the vehicle and try to make sense of what we clearly both just witnessed. What was a short distance back to the vehicle felt like an eternity, carrying the fear that had consumed my body at this point. Merely thinking about that groan is enough to spark those same chills through my body even now. As we sat in the vehicle for what in reality was only likely a few seconds, felt like minutes, we were asking each other what the noise was. A second, now closer, groan rang through that valley, and the fear struck every molecule of my body again. This thing, whatever it was literally on top of us. My only mission at this point was to get the hell out of that valley, and my unnamed passenger expressed the same mission aloud. You know, people often ask why there was no video or picture or recording of some kind in this age of everyone having their phone in their pocket. But after experiencing that frightening sound in near complete darkness minus my own lights, I can definitely understand why people just bolt. I lost all the preconceived ideas we all have that we would be the one with the guts to stick around to find out what just made that sound. But I drove over an hour to search a completely different forest and wetland area for species that night because I no longer wanted to be in that area, and sleep was sure to elude me for days after this unexplainable experience. After returning home that night and the following day, I attempted to make sense of the sounds we witnessed. I messaged friends, avid in the outdoors, to jokingly tell them that I heard a murder or even a Bigfoot last night, hoping for identification suggestions from anyone close to me that could give me an answer more reasonable than either of those ideas. Yet nothing. I researched large cats that are not supposed to be here, and those that are, yet nothing resembling that groan in the felines I listened to. I researched coyote and wolf chatter. Again, nothing in the canine world sounded like that groan. I researched owls, raptors, bears, and once more, nothing matched that bone-chilling sound. I honestly hoped and waited for the news to report a body. Seriously, I was just seeking answers at this point. I was admittedly becoming desperate for answers, Someone has heard this noise in the woods before. There's no way I was the only one. So I desperately contacted a friend of mine that is highly interested and invested in the fields of cryptozoology and the paranormal. Admittedly, I made this contact in hopes to get an answer somewhere along the lines of, "That's not a sound I'm aware of." But much to my surprise, he wanted to know more. He asked, "Where did this happen? When did this happen? Can you tell me what you recall?" So I gave him the details of what I recalled about the above event, with the location in more detail, and the investigation was on. The details of his investigation are heavily documented in his photographs and video. What he found matches almost too unbelievably perfect to the experience I described to him. Now, I don't want to go into detail of his side of documenting this event, since he will do that better than I can on his own. However, I will tell you that the evidence I received after he visited the site of my experience literally made my heart drop. I could feel the color once again leave my face. I'm still not sure what we heard in the valley that night, but what he uncovered leaves me completely unsettled about where the evidence appears to point. The only thing I'm sure of is that whatever it was didn't want to share that valley with us, and it still gives me chills when I think about it. Now, you can be the judge of this evidence for yourself, because I won't tell you what to believe, mostly because I'm still unsure of what to make of it myself.
All right, so thank you guys for sticking around after the break. Hope you guys had an opportunity to really listen to the account by John Tinney. Wow. Yeah. And for those of you guys that know, we've got Joe Perdue here from Wild and Weird, West Virginia, who was the one, the friend that he was talking about, that got the information and actually went out on an investigation. And we didn't, you know, we didn't lead up into really what happened to the investigation whole much, because we wanted to talk to Joe first. And Joe, thank you for joining us.
Hey guys, how you all doing? Glad to be here.
Oh, doing great.
Super duper, man. I'm Sasquatchy all over the place. Sounds like measles. I got the Sasquatch. Oh, oh no, it sounds more like swamp butt.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it does. And,
you know, it's all sweaty. Yeah.
It sounds
like a condition that powder can fix.
Yeah. but real quick, I want to just, before we get into the investigation, I want to take a little bit of time and talk a little bit about John's encounter. So the growls that he heard, those are pretty typical. You know, the two major things people tend to hear in Sasquatch sightings or
hearings,
I guess, is that growl or the whoop, you know, the high pitched one, the one that's further away. But that growl, I can't even imagine. I mean, just hearing my dog growl gives me goosebumps. You know,
well, he's cuddly, so
yeah.
Yeah, it's the growl that John described, it is typical, especially of vocalization encounters. And based off of my research and what I've gotten from studying other encounters and other researchers' work, is that that is typically a sound that an individual will hear if they're in the immediate area, i.e. they are way too close. And it's more of a get out of here kind of.
Yeah, because you think about jumping onto somebody's property, right?
Right.
If you're half a mile down the lane, they're going to say, "Get off my land, you some bitch." Right. But if you're up close, they're like,
"You better listen to me, boy.
You know,
yeah. You better get off my land."
And so it's different. And that makes it even more scary to think how close John had to be. And even hearing it through the car, man. Ooh.
Well, once I got on site, realizing how close John actually was was incredible. You're talking at the furthest away, whatever it was that he encountered, it was big, and it was within about 100 to 50 feet of him the entire time.
Jeez, that's nothing.
And the reason I say 150 feet is because found physical evidence at a 50-foot marker and at about 100 feet.
Wow.
So that's, it's not necessarily a speculative guess of range. Like, you know, when you hear sighting encounters and things of that nature, there you'll hear people give a description of, well, it was about 50 yards, between 50 and 25. No, this was actually like measurements. I took measurements, and it was the first bit of trace evidence was 50 feet away from where he was standing, and then the furthest bit of trace evidence that I found was right inside of the 100-foot mark.
Right. That's just insane, man. You know, we talk about distance being skewed all the time, and he didn't have a chance to even tell how close he was. Right. He just heard it and scooted, which is a smart man. That's exactly what you should do. If you hear it, scoot. Get on out.
And one of the things that John talked about, too, was after the fact that he had this feeling of unease that lingered.
Right.
And that came from talking to him a few days after what happened, and after I'd given him our report of what we found. You know, he did talk about this general feeling of unease, which is indicative of the alleged infrasound.
Right.
Well, and so getting those subsonic waves hitting your body from that close of a range, it allegedly does have that kind of a lingering effect on somebody.
I watched something about Sasquatch that said that it compared them to big cats, and how, like, you know, lions and lionesses and things like that, how they'll do like a really low growl, and the part of the growl that you can hear is only a part of the growl. The part you can't hear is those subsonic, like you said, the kind of the vibrations that are sent your way that trigger in your, you know, kind of back your brain, your lizard brain, if you will, that, hey, I don't need to be here. I need to, you know, fight or flight or whatever the case would be.
Well, I mean, the same thing goes with sound. Is most people don't understand, why do people chant Om? Well, when you chant Om and you hold it, it sits in your lower register, like near closer to your solar plexus and your heart and your lungs area. And that will like shake loose things from your lungs. It creates a sense, almost like a cat purring does. It creates a sense of calmness and oneness, like just simply from the vibration that it makes, because it sits in a lower register. Unless you're that person's like, but I mean, just the standard, like it sits and it vibrates. And as I've done meditation, if I've ever used Om, you can even flip your vocal cord to hit it, to really drill it down. And it's insane. And so, yeah, I mean, these infrared sounds, I was just reading about that in Keel's book, The Eighth Tower. Yeah. He's talking about that, you know, making people sick and just based off of these sounds. And so, sorry to hear John was not feeling so good, you know, man. Like,
well, he had this general feeling of unease, like just stayed nervous, and the fight or flight alert just didn't go away for a little bit.
Well, you know, I was thinking about something just now, and I wonder if anybody's ever really thought about it, but I think probably a lot of people who follow Sasquatch probably assume that they're non-higher vocal beings, right? You only ever hear, like Stefan said, like the whoops or the grunts or the knocking. And so it's maybe assumed that they're not intelligent enough to form words. But what if they're, you know, psychic?
Well, even then, I mean, look at dolphins. They can't form words, but they are, in a lot of ways, smarter than we are, you know?
So, I mean, it could be, though, that they're also pushing some sort of a psychic, you know, type beware.
Right. Or when they're with their people, they're like, hey, Fred, what happened to you today? Right. Oh, well, you know, I whooped it real good while I was out there, scared them boys out there. Well, gee, Williker.
Habit of trying to anthropomorphize things.
Yes.
That we don't understand. So, you know, we, like you had just mentioned, dolphins, even though they're not out there speaking the Queen's English, they're able to communicate. They're able to dictate. Correct. What needs to happen. They're able to organize and generate these hunting parties where they go out and rally fish. It's not just instinctual, they're communicating the whole time. And the animal kingdom, you can see that all across, all the way from insects to your higher mammals. So it's not beyond beyond the scope to think that that's possibly what could be happening. That, you know, they use the infrasound to communicate, much like elephants do.
Correct.
Because we never hear elephants as they communicate within their little, what do you call it, pod or herd or whatever.
Yeah, pod, I believe is what it's called. I don't know.
Little pea pod.
What's a collection of elephants called?
Little pea pod.
The only way you can really tune in is if you get a parabolic. Yeah, the only way you can tune into it is if you have like a parabolic microphone and you start looking at it on in wavelengths of tone.
Right.
And you see all of these crazy activities of vocal ranges that they're able to produce that we can't hear.
Correct. Right. Cats are very similar. Cats, the meows are actually something they created as a way to communicate with humans. They don't, for the most part, don't meow to each other. You know, even my cat, when they're fighting, when she meows, my vet says that's her saying, hey, help me, to us. Right. Like not to Kylo. And so it's very, very interesting that they have their own form of communication as well in different ways. And theirs is all about movement and scent. And different things.
Body language.
But I do want to move on a little bit. And before we get into your investigation, I wanted to say very interesting that he also had a passenger with him. And it already tells you how taboo the paranormal can be, right? That here's this which, by the way, John has told us a million times. I mean, his opening line was, I know I'm going to be ridiculed.
Right.
So it's like he already struggled putting this out there. And then you've got this other guy who was like, hey, bro, don't be telling anybody that I was with you. Just call me Mr. Unnamed, right? And I get that. I mean, I can't. There's been a lot of situations, and people do. We have to ask all the time when we're doing our listener stories. Hey, can we use your name, or do you want us to use an alias? And man, I would say probably 40% of the time they ask for an alias because they're still so worried that somehow it's going to get back to where they work or to their family or something along those lines.
We've had guests on the show that want to have an alias.
Yes. So yes, you know, absolutely. Because they're worried about their career. It's very, very interesting. It's very, very interesting.
Right.
But I do want to quickly give you a little shout out and kind of let people know again who you are. So we got Joe Perdue, and you're a founder or co-founder? Is it both, one or the other, of Wild and Weird?
Co-founder and co-owner, because Wild and Weird West Virginia is a business that we run that actually helps to fund the research side of what we do. And our research side of what we do is called the West Virginia High Strangeness Collective.
Yes. And then you guys have a show as well, right?
Oh, yeah, we do. We actually have a podcast. It's called Wild and Weird Radio, and we cover a wide variety of weird stuff.
That's one of the reasons we like you, because we're like that, too. It's like we're not just satisfied with the podcast. Like, we got to dip our fingers into as much as we can.
Yeah.
And then I had mentioned to you personally that we have a friend named Dominique McGrath. Got to give her a little shout out. Shared friend. So weird. Just small world, because I met her in Seattle as well. That's what's even weirder.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I went out there to work for a little bit doing with photography or art business she was doing.
Yeah, she went out there, and then she worked my best friend in college that Josh knows as well, started a software technology company called Lineage, and she ended up working out there. And then I ended up working out there from home, but I flew out there, I got to meet her, and then she ended up doing the wedding photos for me at my wedding. All kinds of, it's just a crazy small world, man.
I've known Dominique forever, pretty much my entire adult life. I love her and her family. They're great people.
She's awesome. Well, I already told her that when we get out to Point Pleasant this summer, she's going to come out and get some lunch with me and stuff. So I'm really excited. Her and her husband.
Yeah, definitely. And give me a shout, too.
Oh, we already plan on it.
Yeah.
I'm only half an hour south.
Yeah, I looked it up. I was like, cool. It won't be a big deal if we say come on down and join us for the show. So, anyways, I wanted to get all that out there, and just because I really enjoy all the stuff you guys do. Like, I mean, I've been pouring through it for the last couple weeks through all your websites and Facebook pages and the art. You know, you got to show us some of the art that you do. That's just absolutely phenomenal. And we'll, of course, do
teaser footage, too.
Yes.
We haven't released yet.
Yes. So I'm just telling you, there's some good stuff out there, people. So even if you're just in Kentucky, you're a listener in Kentucky or around the country, still some cool stuff. You can get some cool Mothman stuff, all that jazz. And we'll do the plugs at the end. But oh, Lord, I wanted to give them a little bit about you. But so to get to where we were, your guys do investigations. And that's where we are now, is that you, which I love that you guys jumped on this very quickly and said, we need to get out there and we need to investigate this and see what we can find.
The whole vision behind the collective was to form a rapid response team that could collect data and get into the field as quickly as possible. And this happened to be one of those perfect storm moments where I only live 20 minutes away from the investigation site.
It's great.
John got a hold of me and gave me the report. I had him fill out an SSR and told him to, you know, write up everything you can as clearly and concisely as you can right now, because our memory is malleable, right?
Yes.
The longer we sit and stew on a memory, the more it changes.
Yep.
And the more it evolves, it becomes more elaborate. Things start to get embellished. Certain features of the memory begin to shift, and you lose a lot of detail in the important areas and gain details that might have never been there. So having him write that report out as clean and fresh as he could, and then reaching the field as quickly as I could, was so important to us as an investigation team. We can't stress the value of that type of, information gathering.
It's fantastic. I mean, people wait their whole lives sometime to say something. In fact, the UFO sighting we did for this week was a guy talking about it, I think this year, from something that happened to him in the 80s.
Yeah.
Like, right. I mean, he's just now brave enough to come forward. And so no one can investigate that one, right? I mean, it's like not as well as it could.
Yeah, we actually just literally, what time is it? 20 minutes ago, we got a UFO sighting report from earlier today. And I have them filling out the same SSR right now.
Oh, yeah, man. We are lucky. We live in West Virginia and Kentucky are such hotbeds for high strangeness, man. Like,
it really is.
Yeah. That Ohio River Valley is something else, man.
It always has been. If you look at it historically, there's just so mm-hmm. much stuff going on from the time people got here all the way to current day. Back to the investigation portion. When John contacted me, it was one of those things where I knew, okay, I've got to get out there as quickly as possible. So the next morning, I went out to the site, and I got there really, you know, it was in the peak of the quarantine that we've been in.
Correct, yeah.
So there's been nobody out. The parks were actually closed.
Perfect storm, man.
Yeah. And so John was in there doing a salamander migration watch. He was going in documenting species as they were moving into their breeding territories.
Right.
So it was perfect for him because he was able to get in there at night and do his documentation. And then during the day, I was able to get in there. And it was me and a couple of the people who work at the park were the only other humans I saw. There was a couple cars that drove by, but the thing about this specific forest is on either end of the forest is residential areas. Hmm. So it's they never actually put up proper gates to block people out because it's considered a throughfare.
People cut through other parts of the neighborhood.
Right. People can cut through it and make their way to the other end of a town and cut 20 minutes of interstate out of their way.
Kind of like Seneca Park. A lot of people do that too.
Yeah.
So, you know, there were a few cars that drove by, but the location was a perfect location as well. So we had this perfect storm scenario. We go into the perfect location for data preservation because it was located in an area where there's a lot of vernal pools. And for the listeners, vernal pools are areas of water that they might be seasonal, they might be permanent, but they're places that don't really stagnate because water will move through the area. Like it'll feed into a creek. But it's just a larger body, kind of like a pond, a natural pond. And on either end, there will be an area for water to kind of seep out into a creek or a stream.
Right.
And a lot of amphibians and reptiles will use these areas, and mammals will use them for feeding. So they're a hot spot early in the spring and again in the fall.
Especially apparently for Sasquatch.
Yeah.
drinking spot, though. I mean, you got a lot of that pooled water is fresh.
It is. And this specific one is fed by some runoff from the mountain, and then it fills and goes over and flows into a creek. And because of how it is in close proximity to that creek, the ground there stays fairly wet. You know, the water table mm-hmm. is just a few inches below the surface. So it kept the footprints preserved. So as I just gave away, I found footprints. We actually found, as soon as I got on site, within 30 seconds of being outside of my vehicle, my jaw hit the floor because the sun was shining down through the trees and had the entire, the far bank of the vernal pool completely illuminated. And
wow.
Right in the middle were these two big dark footprints where they were sunk into the ground. Hmm. So I was blown away because this thing, these footprints were where I expected to find trace evidence based off John's report.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, man, this is something else. Okay, well, I've now got to figure out a way to get around to those footprints because this is a large vernal pool and I got a creek here. So I do have some boundaries and I can't walk straight through the vernal pool because it was about 4 feet deep.
Now, throughout your time investigating, had you ever come across footprints before, or was this the first one?
I have come across footprints before, but none that were preserved quite as well as these.
Hmm.
You know, these were the first, the second full tracks, second set of full tracks that I've ever found. The majority have been partial, mm-hmm. partial tracks where you'll get like a really good heel print, or you'll get the positioning of the five toes. And actually a lot of Bigfoot researchers prefer the partial tracks over full tracks.
Really? Why is that?
It gives more, it illuminates more of their mechanics and how they move.
Okay.
Because the toes will be in a more organic position. Like they won't be in your, atypical footprint on the beach kind of position.
So they'll be
because they'll be straight back. What was that?
I was saying, it's like when they're picking up their foot, right, and their toes are pressing in more, and you're getting more of that indentation of the toe, or they're stepping down, and you get more of that heel indentation piece. And so, like you said, the more mechanics of their gait and how they're actually walking and that sort of thing.
Absolutely,
and it gives it that better than that somebody stamped a footprint into the ground, which you always hear skeptics talk about.
That's exactly right, and so I saw those footprints on the bank and I was like, wow, okay. So I started trying to navigate my way around. And there's actually a video of this. And typically we don't video our research. At least we don't video it and broadcast it.
Right.
Our investigation research. We hold that back for the collective, and the collective is free to use and have access to all of that information, but we don't normally broadcast it. But something happened when I got to the other side of the vernal pool, and that's why I started videoing. And I started to record everything, and it was one of those hindsight 2020. I had my phone in vertical position when I started recording. And you know, everybody for video purposes. So I was like, oh, well, crap. Oh, well, too late. Can't fix that now. Hopefully I don't die. So I started recording because as soon as I made it in between the creek and the vernal pool, I found another set of tracks, which were the tracks that I cast. So I took a paint stick and a glove and jabbed the paint stick down in it and put a glove around it. So that way I had a flagged area. That way I didn't step on it when I was walking back to it, or didn't have to fight to try to re-find these footprints.
Right.
So I marked them and then made my way back through towards the original prints. As I was marking those prints is when I started running the video, because I heard a grunt, a deep, mm-hmm. loud grunt followed by three knocks. And I turned on the video camera hoping that I could maybe instigate more of that activity and catch it on the camera.
Mm.
And I left the video running the whole time. I broke the video one time just to switch over the camera's perspective and then brought it right back. But anyway, the I heard that and I said, okay, well, I need to start recording that way in case something does wind up, because you never know what's going to happen. I've heard so many reports of aggressive encounters and peaceful encounters. My personal encounter was a peaceful encounter. It wasn't anything that caused me to have fear. It did unnerve me, but it wasn't terrifying. But right. It was one of those things where, okay, I want to get this thing on camera. If I get charged and something tries to kill me, I'm just going to throw my phone like a frisbee back towards my truck. And so I started the video running, and that's what was going through my mind. I can pitch my phone if something comes at me, right? Mm-hmm. And that way people know what happened. But anyway, I go on and I find some partial tracks in between the first two and going towards the ones that I initially found as soon as I got out of the vehicle. So once I made it up to the deeper tracks, I was so bummed out because I couldn't cast them. They were full of water. Mm-hmm. They were right on the edge of the vernal pool. So because of that, the water just rushed in through the leaf litter and through the little the strata that was there.
Right.
Was,
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's that whole area is basically made up of like sand, a little bit of clay, but a whole lot of dead leaves. And you know, that whole area right on the edge of the pool, it was real boggy. And in the video, I even tried jumping up and down beside those two tracks to get my foot to go just anywhere nearly as deep as what these two tracks were, because they were about 6 inches deep. And I was only able to get my foot to go in about an inch. And I'm 250 pounds, and I was giving it everything I could give it. I even jumped off of a stump trying to, you know, really dig my feet in there, because once I figured out that I couldn't cast them, I just took really good video and some pictures.
Yep.
And then I started doing my best trying to replicate the depth. And I was unable to do so. So after that, I went back, I got my plaster, got it mixed, and I poured the original two tracks. And you know, I did find some, stuff that I normally discount, things like limb breaks and stuff like that. You know, not everything's Bigfoot,
right?
Like when you go out in the woods and you see a tree that's fallen and it's sitting at an angle, Bigfoot didn't do that.
Right.
Right.
But to a lot of people, they're like, oh, that's Bigfoot.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, those two trees fell and they formed an X. Bigfoot did it.
X marks the spot.
Right. And that's not the case in probably 99.99% of the cases. Now, I have seen some structures that are questionable. I'll say that.
Sure.
I can't give Bigfoot credit for it, but something made it that was that had hands and an opposable thumb. So it's either a guy making a hunting blind or, you know, an alleged Sasquatch. And you know, I'm usually the guy that tends to lean. Well, some dude was out there and made himself a temporary hunting blind.
Right.
And so anyway, you know, there were a few limb snaps, and then there were some, I documented those. No weird odor was detected by John at all. I know that's indicative of a lot of Bigfoot encounters. People will talk about this pungent odor that they'll smell. He didn't have any kind of odor. The whole time I was there, there was no odor.
Were you upwind or downwind?
That morning, the wind was everywhere.
Okay.
Because, you know, we're right in the middle of seasonal change, and I'm in a valley between two mountains. So the wind was blowing all directions.
Yeah.
Now with the two prints we did get the plaster of, yep. I know I was speaking to you before, these were a little bit different. The depth was different than the one, in the squishy area. Right?
Yes, they were. It was a lot different. The depth was only about an inch and a half, to 2 inches deep, 2 inches deep on the heel on one of them. But the rest of it's pretty uniform, right around a inch and a half to inch and three quarters deep. But this was on harder ground.
Right.
Because once I got the plaster in the ground, I even tried to replicate those tracks myself. And this was in an area where the soil was mostly clay and sand. And I wasn't unable to create an impression this deep. Now, based off of where they were located, the toes were pointed directly towards where John was standing.
Oh, man.
And it was really interesting. And that was probably the most unnerving part of the investigation for John.
I was literally about to ask.
Yeah. he's thinking to himself, I'm standing out there and this thing's just standing there looking at me.
Had he made the wrong move, he could have been attacked. Right.
Yeah.
Because I took a perspective photo standing where the prints were at.
Mm-hmm.
And it was looking directly where his car would have been parked.
Huh.
So, once we gathered all this evidence, we sent it, we didn't immediately publish it, right?
Right.
We consulted a lot of seasoned researchers. We sent it out to Dr. Jeff Meldrum. We sent it out to Dave Spinks, David Bacara, we sent it out to some guys out in the Olympics project. Whoa, about lost my camera there. So we sent it out to a whole lot of researchers for verification, because we wanted them to look at the data that was collected and just validate from their experience, because they've been doing this a lot longer than we have. And we wanted to get, there's no real experts in the field, right? We wanted to get as close to expert opinion as we could.
Correct.
We basically submitted it all for peer review.
Okay.
And pretty much everyone came back with, yeah, that's really good stuff.
And I appreciate you doing that. You know, it shows the level of professionalism you guys have there. You know, it's not a, hey, look what we found, everybody, real life, pay us money. Right. Like, it's very much, it's like, this is science. And that's how we look at it, too, with everything. It's like, even the stuff that has happened to us, we spend days researching to try to find out a way to see if what we saw was just Starlink or whatever.
A reasonable explanation.
Right. And so I appreciate you guys sending that out to these experts. Well, experts with air quotes, but yes, I believe they are experts in the field.
We went out with, we actually had a secondary site review, and we convinced John to come with us. And it was myself, John, and Dr. Russ Jones. Dr. Russ Jones is a local chiropractor. He's also a master naturalist.
Right.
And he's been doing research in this same forest for years, and he's been researching the phenomena for 30 years. And so we had him come out on site because, again, like I said, he's an investigator in that area, and we were wanting to get his take on it. And he came out. I walked him through the investigation area, because he's also he's the lead guy in West Virginia for BFRO as well. So I just wanted to get everybody's kind of general consensus, and the fact that we could get Russ out to take a look with us, it was great. And you know, John talked to Russ and was telling him all the situation, his personal account, and then I walked through the investigation side with him as well. And, you know, he was basically corroborating all the evidence we were compiling together. And he was very impressed with the tracks as well. It was such an awesome experience. I'll say that. It was such an awesome experience.
Just getting to hear it from you is an awesome experience for us, you know, just reading John's account.
Yeah. So so let me ask, I got two questions for you. Number one, are you guys like the male and, you know, whether rain, sweet, sleep, shine, you know, whatever, you guys are out there doing your investigation. Is there ever a point where you're not doing it?
there's, if we don't have enough data, we won't go out. But that's the only thing that keeps us from going out.
Like somebody fills out a report and says, I saw a bright light in the sky. But then that's all the information they give you. That's probably not enough to warrant a full investigation.
Exactly. If that, correct. If somebody just sends out a little nothing report of like, I saw a bright light in the sky and then it was gone. Okay, great.
Yeah.
If you can come up with any more, I'd love to come investigate. Right. But, you know, we're not going to, we're not going to devote resources to that kind of an event. Now, if someone says, I saw a bright light in the sky and then I had a Bigfoot encounter, I'm there now.
Yes, God, they are so sometimes tied together, for sure.
Yeah. You know, a good friend of ours, Stan Gordon, he is we lean on Stan a lot with a lot of our SSR stuff. And when we get reports in, we'll send stuff to him to see what he thinks as well. We bounce a lot of ideas off of Stan. He's a great resource. And you know, through the 70s, there was this huge flap UFO Bigfoot connection.
Right. Yeah.
Things going on in his region. He was leading point on that. And it was just really cool to be able to have him to bounce information off of. But if we get reports in that are extremely vague and nondescript, it's not something we're going to devote a lot of time to.
Yeah. Yeah. So then my second question is, how many Squatch investigations have you done?
Oh, man. I'm trying to add them all up. Now, with the collective, we've only done two. But independently, I was probably proper investigations about six.
Wow.
So that's why for me it was so important to research and bounce these ideas and all of the stuff from the investigation for peer review, just because, you know, I've been investigating Sasquatch since I had my encounter back in 2001, but actually going out and doing real honest to God investigations where, you know, you're treating it like a crime scene.
Yeah.
That's relatively new to us.
You know, it's disappointing. The amount of, hoops that sometimes you have to jump through to make sure that skeptics don't have a lot of ammunition, if you will, you know, call into question anything. So I think that the paranormal in general, so Bigfoot, aliens, whatever, you know, whatever falls into that bucket, is just one of the only areas where it receives that much skepticism.
Yeah. And part of the reason why we haven't had very many investigations specifically on Bigfoot is because a lack of people coming forward, or they'll come forward, but like you guys had experience with that UFO report, it was from the 80s. It's such an old case, you know, Right. There's nothing to go and investigate. Now, you can go to the area, you can look and see if there's any activity in the area, but you're not investigating an account anymore. You're just investigating an area. And now going to investigate an actual area, you know, I've done a lot of that. You know, I've walked all through the woods of Putnam County and Kanawha County and Boone County and Logan, and looked for activity and things of that nature. But, you know, those weren't sanctioned investigations. Those were just prospecting, I guess you would call it.
Yeah.
Right. Now, you had loosely mentioned here about your own encounter. Do you mind sharing that at all with us?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's I'll give you the Campbell's condensed version.
Ooh, do we have to add water?
Add some water to it.
Okay.
It's it the whole thing, like, for when I try to give people this encounter, and normally it's something that I've been open with sharing with people for the last few years, just because, you know, I've been in various positions within church in the past and for pretty much all of my adult life. And if I go around telling people that I had a Bigfoot encounter, you know, that's like, well, you're crazy.
Right. Bye. Yeah.
But I haven't been serving in leadership or in any capacity for the last 3 years now at this point. And that's when I got involved in the Bigfoot community, really.
Good.
And so I started being more open about sharing my encounters, because I met similar and like people who had had encounters and who were previously clergy or existing clergy members. So, you know, it kind of, you find people that you can relate to, and you get a little bit more comfortable with sharing your story.
I mean, that was our guest last week, Mary Dees Hampton, the actor. She talked a lot about, like, the UFO sightings she's had, and she's like, and I'm a Christian. You know, she was just like, most Christians will say, hey, I can't believe that I've saw that, but I believe it. Like, and that was encouraging for some of our Christian listeners. So,
and for me, you know, it was aside from being in ministry, I was also in the military.
Oh, yeah. And I forgot about that. Yeah.
So in my younger life, I enlisted at, I was actually gone out of the house at 18. And
wow.
And I was with the Air Force. And you can't just willy-nilly go around talking about Bigfoot if you have a security clearance. Because,
right.
Can you be trusted with a firearm? So I wasn't really comfortable sharing it at that point. But now, like I said, I've become a lot more comfortable with sharing that, my encounter and whatnot. So essentially, you know, I love the woods. I'm an avid woodsman, and I love going out and, hunting and various just things out in the woods. So we had an area on private land that we had put some, I guess, greens and some root vegetables. Mm-hmm. That was out there just as kind of like a food plot to bring in deer. And it was squirrel season still yet. So I was going up just to go check the plot to see if there was any kind of like rubs, any kind of digs and scrapes on the ground.
Activity in general.
Yeah. And just to scope it out and see if this was going to be a you know, place worth me going and spending a weekend or two to go hunt. And mind you, it was just beyond my house. So it was, you know, about 2 miles through the woods, and you were there. So to give you a layout of the land, it is, you guys being from Kentucky are kind of familiar with how the mountains just roll. So I was at the base of one of the hills, and there was a creek, and then immediately another hill starts up the other side.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this whole area on the other side had been timbered years previous. So everything that was there was like new growth, maybe like 6 to 8 foot tall saplings was all that was really in the area. And so it's great, great, big, wide open clear spots as well. So it was perfect to go hunt. And, you know, just be able to sit in the brush on one hill and shoot over to the next, because it's all less than 100 yards. It's all within 100 yards where, you know, and it was perfect. So I'm going up, and I'm just going to go check the area and see what's going on. And as I come down, I didn't want to drive the four-wheeler all the way in. So I parked it at the top of the hill and walked myself down and got to where the brush was that I had planned on hunting from. And I was just going to kind of sit there and watch for a little bit. So I walked in, and as I was walking in, I didn't notice anything. I wasn't really paying attention because I was focused more on, you know, not stepping on a copperhead or something of that nature.
Amen.
It felt really warm. And so I'm going in, and I get in to get situated. And once I get down on the brush and really start scanning the area, that's when I notice something up on the about, you know, roughly 20 to 30 yards from the tree line. And there were three of these creatures.
Wow.
There was a big one, a less big one, and a little one.
So we got mama bear, daddy bear, baby bear.
It's to being as speculative as possible, yes. That
don't eat their porridge. That's all I'm going to tell you, listeners out there. Do not eat the Sasquatch's porridge.
You're not blonde, are you?
I can't tell you with 100% certainty that that was Bigfoot.
Right.
But I saw something, and I can't explain what it was, and that's where it started. So I see these three things, and I'm sitting, in a position where I'm downwind. The wind is coming against my face. I don't smell anything weird from them. So again, this goes against the, they emit like a skunky odor. I didn't smell anything.
Right.
And I'm able to watch these creatures for a couple minutes. This sighting took place for a good bit of time. It wasn't like I saw it cross the road and, there they were gone.
Right.
I was actually able to observe these things, and I watched the smaller one was just wild. I was just enamored with the little one more than anything, because it ran around. It was just acting like a little kid, it was excited to be able to play, I guess, and was just playing. And I watched it, and then all of a sudden I felt the wind shift against me. And I said, oh, crap.
Oh, yeah.
And it wasn't maybe 15 seconds after that the biggest one stood up off of its haunches and it turned its head. I never got a full real good view of any of them. One, I was too far away to be able to really make out facial details or anything of that nature.
Yep.
But there was enough. I saw a profile of a face. And it turned and smelled, and then the little one stopped everything it was doing, ran up, grabbed the big one, and all three of them walked off into the woods.
Wow.
And one of the things that the bigger ones, now mind you, we're sitting here talking about an alleged Bigfoot encounter, and I'm saying that it sounds goofy in my head, but like one of the more boring things that I watched him do was turning over a log and scratching at it. And, it was just an old deadfall that was there, and the bigger one was just scratching at it. And, thinking back now, it was probably digging for grubs.
Grub.
It was an old deadfall. So they were foraging for food is what the bigger ones were doing, and the little one was playing. But I was so focused on the little one because it was just moving, like, so wild. And then they catch wind of me. There was no aggression. I didn't have a tree thrown at me. There was no vocalizations, no screams, no nothing. They just walked off into the woods. And as soon as I lost sight of them, I said, now it's time for me to get out of here. Quick.
Yeah.
So, I made my way back up the game trails as quietly as I could, got on my four-wheeler, went home, and never went back.
Wow.
So, because I'm working on a working theory here, any caves in the area?
Not natural caves that I'm aware of, but this whole area is coal field land. It's all mined property. So it's the same thing. And actually my encounter took place about 5 to 6 miles from where John's encounter took place.
That's kind of going to be my next question.
Wow. Yeah. And so I know this is, again, this is getting into huge speculation territory, but my mind cannot help but wonder, did I collect footprint casts from one of the ones that I got to observe?
Yep. I was wondering that too.
Years ago.
Right.
I mean, how crazy would that be? I know that there's never going to be any way that we could prove that these casts even came from a Bigfoot unless they pull a body somewhere. But it's fun to sit and think about that, being experienced here, I can't help but think about that and be fascinated by it. And my business partner, Ron, he laughs. He's like, oh no, it's don't say it. But I can't help it, man.
It almost line up in time to possibly be the child.
Exactly. That's what I thought too. It could possibly be the little one.
Yeah, especially with the way you said that there was less of a reaction, a younger one may have different experience, right? You know, as it's gotten older and maybe more skittish, maybe from hunters or things like that over time. One of the last follow-up questions I have is just simply, you know, do you think people should still go out to this park, right? I mean, it's like there is this possibility of danger, and I didn't really pay attention or notice that the park was mentioned at all. But it's like, you know, should we say, hey, if y'all are going to go out there, be careful.
Yeah. I personally, being a woodsman, and I'm actually I'm in the Master Naturalist course myself right now. And being a woodsman and someone who grew up in the woods, there is an immense amount of danger as soon as you leave the pavement, anywhere you go.
Sure. Yeah. Yep.
You have just as much of a chance of a deadfall striking you, so much that they call those a widowmaker. You know, like you'll be walking around a tree, and if the tree is dead, like I know you've been out in the woods at some point in your life and you saw a tree that was dead, no leaves on it, but all the branches were there except for maybe a couple have broken and fallen.
Right.
You could walk under that tree and the wind blow and a branch fall and take you out right now. And you have just as much of a chance of that happening as getting bit by a venomous animal, being attacked by some kind of predatory animal, or just simply getting lost or falling and injuring yourself and not being able to get out.
Yeah, that's why I don't go in the woods. Just work.
No, you're just scared of snakes.
I go camping in October. That's the only time. Yeah.
But
everything's sleeping, so.
I don't think that people need to be afraid of going out into the woods and being hunted down by a Bigfoot.
Right.
I don't think that should be a legitimate fear. I think that people should be vigilant.
Yes.
I think that people should take record of what they encounter. Any kind of strange occurrence that could occur while you're out in the woods, you know, you never know what it could be.
Yep. And that leads me to say, it's like anybody out there, if you've had a sighting, the more and more that you report these things, the more and more that gives credence and it gives understanding and scientific evaluation to it. Yep. And, you know, it's like my big thank you to John for even having the balls to put this out there. It's like we now have an investigation with evidence, with prints, with this, with that could lead to future better understanding of the phenomena that may or may not exist. So,
yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, so again, don't be afraid to go out in the woods. You might be the person that finds some new species out there. And I mean that from the sense of a salamander or a bug all the way up to a Sasquatch.
You know? Right.
Right. So, Joe, is there, I want to thank you again for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing everything, man. Appreciate it.
You know, it's been fun. I enjoyed it.
This is, you know, to get to do what you do is a pretty awesome thing. You know, Stefan and I have talked about a couple of times about somehow getting involved with like MUFON or something to try to do some investigations or something like that, because this is a really cool thing. But yeah, to get to go out there and really, help people, maybe help either set their mind at ease if you can, for lack of a better term, debunk it, right?
Right. I mean, it helps John know he wasn't crazy. Right. Even though he had a witness with him, this helps him say, oh my God, what we saw was real, not some mass hallucination.
Well, and also for people who it may not have been an actual sighting, whatever the sighting was, it also can help set their mind at ease that, you know, they're safe to go wherever they need to go or whatever the case may be. So again, I thank you, and I thank everybody who goes out there and does investigations, because it's definitely a public service, in my opinion. So again, so thank you for coming on. Is there anything that you want to, you know, pass along to our listeners, or how can they find you if they live in the area and need to report something and want your team to investigate?
Well, if you live in the area and you want to send in a report, you've got a few options. You can send the report directly to wildandweirdwv@gmail.com. You can go to our website, wildandweirdwv.com, and actually click on the report a sighting link, and it will send you straight to the SSR, and that can send us an email. You can send us messages on our Facebook pages. We have a community page that's called Wild and Weird West Virginia UFO and Paranormal Talk. And that's a community page that anybody across the nation can get involved in. And we've had reportings sent in there as well. Or you can look me up on Facebook, send us messages directly, anything like that. We've created so many avenues for people to be able to reach us that if someone just makes even the weakest attempt at it, they'll be able to.
Right. And we're going to pass your information along to Tori Smith and the Paranormal Help Desk. Her whole mission is connecting people all over the country to investigators of cryptozoology and paranormal and UFO sightings. And that's her whole bag. And it's
that'd be awesome. Great.
Yeah. She's always looking for resources in other states. And so we'll be passing that info to her. But Joe, dude, thank you so much, man. I can't wait to have you back on and do a full episode just talking to you about all your other experiences, man. I'm so Absolutely. Thankful you took the time to share with us about this investigation. And on behalf of John, like sharing his story, we really appreciate it. Man.
Hey, guys, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. And for me to sign off, everybody stay wild and weird.
Yes. All right, man. Take it easy, man. And we'll catch you on the flip side, man. Yeah, man. So thank you to Joe Perdue and John Tinney. Thank you guys so, so much.
I mean, that was just the account is amazing. The work that Joe did to ensure that, you know, we had the, you know, that he got the right evidence, that he wasn't, that he wasn't portraying things or doing anything to influence, you know, people's thoughts or decisions on the topic. I think it's just really, really hard, you know, professionalism from Joe's perspective that he went out there and treated this really like almost like a crime scene, if you will.
Yeah, and did really, it immediately yeah, for that really, reason. And yeah. We're going to post that YouTube link of his investigation and all of that. It's so very interesting. And of course, make sure you're patroning Wild and Weird West Virginia. You know, get on there, buy some of that art, get a T-shirt, all that stuff. Or if you're out West Virginia way, I mean, it's just so much good stuff, man. I'm so excited. And I'll tell you, we got to have Joe on for Getting Spooky.
Definitely. Definitely going to have Joe.
Ooh, just even talking to him outside of the interview. He knows some stuff, man. And I'm very, very excited. But again, thank you, Joe. And thank you, John, so much for giving your time to our blanket huggers to share with them your incredible story as well as your investigation. We really, really appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
And yeah, hopefully we'll follow up again sometime down the road, see if there's been any new Squatch Watches. You know what I mean? See if there's any new sightings. Because I feel like if it happens once, it's going to happen again. So, exactly. John, sorry to tell you that. I know it was frightening. But yeah, anyways, we're going to get moving on here. I want to get into our listener story. This week, our listener story comes from yet another person from Haunted History of Kentucky. This one is a very, very interesting story because he kind of almost went at it with a scientific method, so to speak, and you'll see what I mean. But this is from Eric Haley, and it is being portrayed by one of my very good friends and a very good friend of our show, Chris Chavez, who is the host of the YouTube channel Nerd News. Some of his people have seen us. He talked about us on his show. We're always talking about him. We love him to death. He's out in Seattle. He's a really good friend. But yeah, Chris Chavez, make sure to check out his YouTube channel, youtube.com/ChrisChavezNN, as in Nancy for Nerd News. And you get all his updates on all the nerdiest of nerd stuff, rumors, all that good stuff. But Chris is also an actor, and he does a wonderful job here. So this is Eric Haley's story.
Hello, my name is Eric Haley from Kentucky, and this is the first time that I have ever shared this in public. I've only told this story to one other person. I mean, it isn't all that scary, but it's true. At my old house I lived in, three people had previously passed away in that house. Two of the three died in their sleep of old age, but the other was shot and murdered. Every night I could hear footsteps in the hallway, and I always felt I was being watched in certain areas of the house, but mainly in the hallway at the entrance to the hallway. In my bedroom, which was the first room by the entrance to the hallway, I always shut my closet door because I would just get that claustrophobic feeling, and I would feel really like this bad sense of dread, like I was in danger. I never opened my closet door at night, you know, unless I absolutely had to, which luckily was not very often. The person I told was my best friend, and he told me to turn on some type of older tech, and if there was a ghost, it would mess with it. I didn't really believe, but, you know, I tried anyways. I had one of those huge CD players, you know, the ones from the late 90s, and I turned it on and I said something like, "If there's something here, turn this on before I get back this evening." Well, when I got back that evening, it was turned on, which got me thinking, okay, there may have been, you know, a timer on it or something that turned it off. So the next morning, I tested it again, but this time backwards. This time, I left it on and I said, "Okay, this time I am asking you to turn it on by this evening." And it was on when I checked that evening. So by now, I'm getting convinced. So I tried it again. And this time I said, "I'm going to leave this plugged in, and I want you to unplug it." And that evening, it was unplugged. Okay, so then I said, "Okay, this is the last test. I am leaving it unplugged again. I want you to plug it back in." That evening, I checked it, and it was plugged in. By then, I was genuinely scared because I was thinking, if it can do that, all of that, that means it could kill me or something. Another time I was on the computer in the same room. I had this eerie feeling and I saw something at the corner of my eye, and so I looked down the hallway. Standing there was some old guy that I had never seen in my entire life. He was slowly walking down the hallway with an old style cane and slowly walked down and looked right at me. Through the entire experience, I could even hear his footsteps. I just sat there frozen, not knowing what to do. I waited what felt like forever to see if he was ever going to leave or if he was gone. I got up and I looked back and forth down the hall and never saw it again. Later, I asked my mom about the old guy who passed away in the house. She didn't know much about him, but always wanted to investigate to see if, you know, who I saw was the gentleman that passed away in the house. Well, hopefully one day I'll have an answer. But until then, I just keep staring down that hallway.
So yeah, pretty interesting, man. Very, very, very interesting indeed.
Well, I've heard of like things, you know, turn it on and turn it off, but like to plug something in, I mean, that's like a whole nother level of.
That's what I'm talking about. So, I mean, he went real scientific on it, right? I mean, it's about as scientific as I would get. But yeah, it's like, I love that. And, you know, there is something to be said about old analog type things. You know, they say that, I don't know, paranormal things tend to work a little better through analog than digital. You know, I don't know. There's definitely that old, I mean, it's like you trying to see EVPs or symbols through the snow on the TV and things like that. You can't do that with just a pixelated screen, right?
Right.
Like it they don't pick up the digital. And I wonder if that's because that's all housed, right? It's all housed inside something as opposed to analog signal, which comes in.
But I mean, analog signal is one thing. Physically taking a plug and plugging it into a socket. I mean, that's complete. Like, that's just a whole. I mean, I feel like after that experiment, I would have left a pad of paper and a pen out and said, "Okay, write your name down." You know,
write your name down and tell me where to find the gold. Like,
so,
Exactly. Who knows? I'd love to follow up with that guy and see if there's any more experiences on that. But yeah, thank you for sending that in to us, Eric, as well as Chris. Thank you for being an amazing actor and sending taking your time to do that for us.
Yep.
But yeah, so that puts us at the end of the show, Josh. What an amazing ride today has been. Get out there, do your Squatch Watch, guys. Get out there if you have any Squatch Watch, any Sasquatch, Yeti, Bigfoot sightings, let us know. We want to know. We're very, very interested in cryptozoology. Not even just, Sasquatch. If you've seen anything else, I mean, if you've seen a Flatwoods monster or if you've seen a goblin or yeah, anything along those lines, let us know.
If you've seen somebody in Walmart that you think might be a goblin.
And there's a few.
Send
them just to us.
Well, we want to know.
Or ogres.
Yeah, right.
So no, but do send those stories, what paranormal, UFO, whatever, send those stories to us at fearscapepodcast@gmail.com or find us on any of our social medias, which you can find us at Fearscape Pod. That's on Instagram, Twitter, as well as the other one.
Facebook.
Thank you. Yeah. You can find us there as well as, or you can just find all this stuff on our webpage, which is www.fearscapepodcast.com. You can even get a link to our YouTube page, which is Fearscape Media. There you can see all of our Fearscape Unhinged episodes or any other weird thing that we decide to pop in there, trailers or whatnot. But there are two other great things on the website that Josh is going to tell you about.
Yeah, so we've got a great store through TeePublic, doing great t-shirts. All of our designs that we have available for a t-shirt, you can also get on all kinds of other products like mugs or totes or pillows.
And even you, Josh, you just designed a sweet shirt for our official blanket huggers, so to speak. Make sure to check out that one. That one's great.
Yeah, so on the website, you just click on the link for store and it takes you right there. Also on the website, you can get to our Patreon page. And so if you like the stuff that we bring you, you like the content we bring you, and you want to, maybe look at how to help us continue to do this, please consider being a monthly Patreon subscriber. And with that, you get some, access to some things like a private Facebook group, some live streams that are coming down the pipe, as well as for our higher tier members, you can actually get a free t-shirt from the store as
free
well.
Free t-shirt from our store, so many other things, and there will be Patreon only things that we share with you guys, as well as Anchor has its own sponsorship page as well. If you're interested in going that route, feel free. But we are just so thankful for all of our blanket huggers out there, for all the support that you guys have shown us. And we are just so very excited. We have so much great stuff coming up this year. We're so pumped for you guys. But we are going to get out of here. Josh, thank you so much. It is always a pleasure. Always.
Thank you.
Yeah, always, it's like double mint gum, dude. It's just always a pleasure.
Well, a pleasure. We could be in the commercial, twins or something, like that woman.
I mean, you have twins, so
that's true.
You could, use them and live vicariously through them.
I mean, we could be like the Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger of twins.
Exactly.
Separated at birth or something.
On that, I'm going to stop you because now I want to go watch the movie. But no, thank you guys so much for tuning in. Make sure to check back our archive and check out older episodes. They're all good, I promise. And on that, we're going to get out of here. My name is Stefan Gearhart, and I will catch you on the flip side.
This has been Josh. The truth is out there.
And hey, folks, make sure to hold those blankets extra tight because things tend to get spooky when you listen to Fearscape. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
I'm so glad you were able to join us for that horrifying discussion. I hope they didn't frighten you too much. Tune in next week for even more research into the nightmarish and haunting creeps and spooks that we tell ourselves don't exist, but we know they do. Make sure you have your blankets, that you hold them extra tight. Next time on Fearscape.